First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Friday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope we're all enjoying our Fridays, and we're going to try and make them that much better as we send you into the holiday weekend. Final weekend of May, of course, means Memorial Day weekend. We'll talk a lot of Memorial Day weekend on the show today. The unofficial start of summer, and we have our Friday Five at the end of the show, which will be a lot of Memorial Day weekend type of questions. If you are traveling somewhere for the holiday, things like that, what do you like to do with that extra day off that we get on Monday? So we will certainly talk a little bit about the summer really getting going in earnest this weekend. But while the summer might just be starting, the NBA and NHL seasons are coming to a close as we are down to three teams left in each league, with the Denver Nuggets already in the NBA Finals and the Florida Panthers already in the Stanley Cup Final. And we're still awaiting an Eastern Conference champion in the NBA and a Western Conference champion in the National Hockey League. And we're going to start, as both of those series were prolonged last night, we'll start with the NBA Eastern Conference Finals as the Boston Celtics win it 110-97 over the Miami Heat to force a Game 6 tomorrow night in South Beach. And the team we saw last night in Beantown, that is the best team in the NBA. That is the best team that when they play that way, no one beats them. And it's bizarre that it takes until facing elimination for the Boston Celtics to do this, as they are now 7-1 in their last eight elimination games, with the only loss coming in the NBA Finals Game 6 last year. But as the old adage goes, better late than never, I suppose. And we have a Game 6 tomorrow night. The Celtics dominated from start to finish last night. It was not as close as that 13-point margin indicates. Every single starter for the Boston Celtics was a plus 10 or better. And four players for Boston had at least 20 points. So it was really everything you could have hoped for if you were the Celtics, because for the first time in this series, we saw the Boston Celtics assert their dominance. And for the first time in this series, Boston looked like the best team in the NBA, and Miami looked like an 8 seed. Because Miami, for all five of its starters, from a plus-minus standpoint, all five of them were a minus 5 or worse. And so I found myself saying, well, we can credit the Celtics for playing the way they played last night. But I also found myself a little skeptical as to why this happens. Why the Celtics seemingly wait until they're facing elimination to wake up. Why does it need to be in an elimination game for the Celtics to look like the best team in the league? Why does it need it to be until Game 7 against the Sixers when Jason Tatum just goes crazy? And last night, there wasn't one stat line like Jason Tatum's 51 points against the Sixers in Game 7, but you had everybody going last night, and the Celtics win. And I just wondered, where was that the first four games? Now, as I said, better late than never, but I will remind you that even in Game 4, a game that Boston won, Miami had a 6-point lead at halftime. So Game 5 was the first game in this series where for 48 minutes Boston was better. And I talked about how I did not agree before yesterday's game with the national narrative of the Celtics are back in this series and they could really be the first team to come from 0-3 down to win a playoff series. And the reason I didn't agree with that was because there's too much of a Jekyll and Hyde nature with the Boston Celtics. And maybe I answered my question here when I said, why does it take so long? Why does it take until facing elimination for the Boston Celtics to play their best? And this is not a Joe Mazzulla or Ime Udoka thing, because this happened last year with Udoka. And so, for one reason or another, these series get extended, and then they really kick it into another gear. And I think that is the sign of a team that's up and down, ebbing and flowing their way through the postseason. And I don't think you can win an NBA championship that way. Because I think that's an indicator that you're just too inconsistent for your own liking. Think about it. Let's just say Boston does win this series and make history as the first team to come from 0-3 down to win an NBA playoff series. That means that the Boston Celtics will have played 20 out of a possible 21 games in the Eastern Conference playoffs on their way to the NBA Finals. You think about teams that win the NBA championship, usually there's one quicker series in there. And in the case of the Denver Nuggets, they haven't had to play a Game 7, and they've only had to play one Game 6. They beat Phoenix in 6 in the second round, Minnesota in 5 in the first round, and just swept the purple and gold Los Angeles Lakers in the conference finals. So the Nuggets have been the emblem of consistency in this postseason, and the Celtics, while they are still playing, have been the opposite. So the narrative about, well, the Celtics after Game 4, oh, well, they're back in the series and they could really do this, I did not subscribe to. And while last night was the first time the Boston Celtics looked like the best team in the National Basketball Association, it's still not enough for me to sit here on Friday, May the 26th, on the eve of Game 6, and say, yes, the Boston Celtics are going to do this. And, you know, you got the 0-4 Red Sox leaning into it now. Kevin Millar made a video, put on social media. Johnny Damon tweeted Celtics in 7. You know, first off, I heard this brought up on the Lombardi line before we jumped on the VSiN show. There's been 152 teams that have gone down 0-3 and none of them have won the series. 149 of them were down 0-3 having lost the first two on the road and then lost game 3 at home. The Celtics are in the rare case of a team that lost the first two at home and then lost game 3 on the road. And so it, from that standpoint, the reason why that's relevant is the Celtics had home court advantage to begin this series. They were the favorite team, and almost every other example in the history of the NBA of a team that goes down 0-3 is a team that was the underdog, lost the first two games on the road, then went back home and lost the third game. So I think that is some important context, but it's also my way of saying that it just doesn't feel, and I was talking with our buddy Paul Gallant before I jumped on here, who is a Boston native, and he said, I believed after game 5 in the Red Sox. I believed after those David Ortiz heroics that something was going on and that the Red Sox could really do it. And this Celtics team is just far too inconsistent. And that's why it frustrated me as a Sixers fan that they blew the series, because I've watched Boston now five times against Miami, and I've seen those same inconsistencies manifest their way into the Eastern Conference Finals to the point where the Celtics are down 3-2 still. So, yes, the pressure ramps up on the Heat. And that's going to be the big talking point going into tomorrow night's game. Miami needs to win this game because there's no way they're going to win Game 7. But while I've spent a lot of the segment talking about Boston, I think Miami has been the model of consistency most of the playoffs, as evidenced by the fact that last night was the first time in the NBA playoffs that the Miami Heat lost back-to-back games. So if they hadn't lost back-to-back games at all in the playoffs, why should I think they're going to lose four in a row now? And game four was also the first loss in the playoffs for Miami at home. They won both the games in the Milwaukee series at home. They won three games at home against the New York Knicks. And they won game three at home against Boston. They did lose a play-in game at home against Atlanta. But those aren't the real playoffs. That's just the play-in tournament. So Miami's been too consistent for me to think that it will lay down at this point. And Boston has been too inconsistent for me to think that it is capable of winning four in a row. So I still think this thing ends tomorrow night. I was wrong in thinking that it would end last night. But we're going to get to the hockey in a minute. If I thought Dallas would extend it and get to a game five in Sin City, and they did win. And hey, if I could be wrong about one of those two, I would rather be wrong about the basketball, because now we got two playoff games tomorrow night, and it's a pretty fun previous channel night if you stay in or go to a bar with two screens. They'll be going on at the same time. Game 5 Western Conference Final, Dallas Stars, Las Vegas Golden Knights. Actually, it's just Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think the loss is in their formal team name. So Dallas Stars, Vegas Golden Knights, Game 5 tomorrow night, and Game 6, Boston Celtics, Miami Heat of the Eastern Conference Finals, will make for a good beginning of your Memorial Day weekend, a Saturday night with a pair of playoff games going on concurrently. We talked hoops. Let's go to the ice on the other side. Dallas lives to see another day. That's next. And then Abby Chin from NBC Sports Boston in about 15 minutes to talk more about that Celtics victory. This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
The call last night in Dallas as Sean McDonough will get to call at least one more hockey game as TNT has the Stanley Cup Final. That was Sean McDonough on ESPN as the Dallas Stars win it 3-2 in overtime. The American, one of the better American-born players in my lifetime, Joe Pavelski, wins it for Dallas and certainly, if Dallas is able to keep this thing going, everybody is going to really get behind the Joe Pavelski story as he is one of the cool things about, and we don't always get these types of stories with Stanley Cup playoff runs, is the one veteran that, you know, the old guy finally winning the cup story. And Joe Pavelski is that guy. If Dallas manages to pull off a miracle here and get all the way back from 0-3 down. Pavelski's 38. He played in the Stanley Cup Final with the San Jose Sharks in 2016. Played in the Stanley Cup Final with the Dallas Stars in 2020. And is a very decorated NHLer that is missing a Stanley Cup from his resume. So certainly a story to get behind if you're just in on the feel-good stories and don't necessarily have a dog in the fight. But obviously, still a very uphill battle for the Dallas Stars. But I do think that last night was, I mean, that was what I thought it would be from the Dallas Stars, in the sense that if you have any pride, and this is true in every sport, when you get, and it's funny, ironically enough, we just talked about the Celtics trying to come back from 0-3 down and Boston sports going goo-goo gaga over the 0-4 Red Sox. Game 3 of the ALCS, the Red Sox lost 19-8. And I'm not saying it's better to get clobbered, but I think sometimes there are these moments, and that game 3 in the 2004 ALCS was at Fenway. There are sometimes these moments in playoff series where you get so embarrassed in your building to where, I'm not saying, again, you should want this to happen, but it lights a fire under you a little bit, and it kind of motivates the team to say, hey, wait a second, that's not who we are. That's not what got us to the Western Conference Final, and we need to be better. And I was at the game Tuesday night, and the Stars were horrible. And then you know, they had the Jamie Benn ejection, and you had fans throwing stuff on the ice. It was an awful night for the Dallas Stars. And I just think that if you have any gumption, if you have any stones in your locker room, any pride, you're going to show up the next day or the next game, and you're going to at least say, as I said, that's not who we are. And that was the kind of team that showed up last night for Dallas. Now, the game still went to overtime. Like, Vegas played well. It was a good hockey game. I much rather would have preferred to have been at that game last night than the game on Tuesday. But beggars can't be choosers. I got to go to a Western Conference final game for free. I'll take it. But they got, like, they were up for the fight last night, the Stars. Like, and I know it's all these cliche things when you get down 0-3, hey, one game at a time, like one shift at a time, one period at a time. But they kept at it after Vegas. William Karlsson scored for Vegas on a little redirect in front of the net, like 5 minutes into the game or something. And Dallas very easily could have said, here we go again. And that could have gotten out of hand, especially without your captain in Jamie Benn. But who stepped up last night for Dallas? I mean, obviously, Pavelski gets the game winner. Jason Robertson, who's been one of the best players in the entire season, pops in too, including a power play goal at the end of the first period, or towards the end of the first period, 15:42 elapsed time, to even the score at one. Robertson had another game-tying goal in the second period. And Pavelski gets the power play game winner. And Robertson, by the way, 109 points in the regular season. I mean, he was insane. And he had a couple goals in the games in Vegas. And this was why I always felt that this series was so interesting. And unfortunately, it is only 3-1. And, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done here for Dallas to make it really interesting. But it felt like the matchup was just great because you had a great mix of top-end talent, Jason Robertson, Roope Hintz, Miro Heiskanen, even Pavelski still for Dallas. Ample depth to where you didn't have liabilities on the third and fourth lines, liabilities on the third defense pair. Good goaltending for both teams most of the playoffs. Now, Ottinger had been a little leaky in this series for Dallas, but Aiden Hill comes in for Laurent Brossoit and has played very well. And then when you look at the top-end talent for Vegas, Jack Eichel, Mark Stone, Alex Pietrangelo, Jonathan Marchessault has been out of his mind in these Stanley Cup playoffs. William Karlsson having a good playoffs. And it filters down. Like, there's a good mix of, as I said, top-end talent and depth on both of these rosters. So I went into the series thinking this is going to be a really good Western Conference final. And unfortunately for Dallas, they did not get a split of those two games in Vegas, particularly game two when they were up 2-1 with, like, 3 minutes left in regulation, and Eichel makes this crazy pass from behind the goal. Marchessault time knocks it in. We go to overtime. Vegas wins. And the Stars laid an egg at home in game three. You can't have that. You know, it may be what they look back on and say that did us in, because obviously if they won game three, this thing would be tied 2-2. But I think the real problem for Dallas was not being able to win one of those two overtime games. Like, you can get by, as I said, you can get by the laying of an egg because sometimes it ignites a fire under you. Sometimes it just reinvigorates your group a little bit, and it felt like it did that for Dallas. And if they laid an egg when the series was tied 1-1, you know, okay, it can't be any closer than 2-1 after three. It just so happens that your third game was a garbage game. And so the series obviously has a different feel to it. As opposed to 3-0 after three and now 3-1 going back to Vegas. And I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that either one of these teams, because of how evenly matched I went into the series thinking it would be, I have a hard time thinking either one's going to lose four in a row. Which is why I like Dallas to win the game last night. And I think Vegas will probably wrap it up tomorrow. Even if Vegas loses tomorrow on home ice, I could see them going to Dallas and winning game six. It's difficult for me to see a path here. The Stars are a good hockey team. They belong in the Western Conference Final. This isn't a fluke. But you let both those games slip away in overtime in Vegas, and then you laid an egg. You kind of made your own bed in game three. And we'll see if they're able to dig their way all the way out of this thing. I have a hard time thinking they can, but as I said, as somebody that doesn't have a dog in the fight left in the NBA or the NHL, I'm just happy we get two games to watch tomorrow night. Going on at the same time, and certainly in the NBA, you have a real vibe with that Eastern Conference Finals where, obviously the momentum and the talking points behind the Celtics maybe being able to do this are picking up. I don't think that will happen in the NHL Western Conference Final unless Dallas wins Game 5 in Vegas. But I guess what I'm saying is Games 1, 2, and 4 are more representative of these two hockey teams in Vegas and Dallas than 3. 3 was an outlier, and it was a bad outlier for Dallas. It was an awful night for the Stars, and they have themselves to blame for that. But these are two teams that are good, two teams that are deep, two teams that have top-end talent. And in the case of Dallas, and two teams that will make you pay if you take penalties. And Jason Robertson scored a power play goal last night. Joe Pavelski gets the game winner on the power play. Special teams can really change game scripts of playoff games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, you can very easily get yourselves back into a game if you get a power play at the right time, and you can very easily give a game away if you take a penalty at the wrong time. So I was just happy we had an entertaining hockey game to watch. It was back and forth. Neither team scored back-to-back. I stand corrected. Dallas scored back-to-back goals to tie the game at 2 and then to win the game 3-2. But that was the only time Dallas had the lead all night. So it was back and forth. It was a good roller coaster. It was a fun playoff game to watch last night in Dallas. And, of course, playoff hockey overtime games always are a lot of fun, regardless of the teams playing. And the Stars showed that element of pride that I thought they needed to show up with last night. You don't get to the Western Conference Final and then just lay down. And so I give them credit for at least still playing hard. And Pavelski said it in his interview last night. I mean, he did a lot of one game at a time, cliche stuff. But, I think it was Ottinger who I saw in the post-game media, and he said, we are going there confident because we were right there in games 1 and 2. And he is right about that. So, I am not, after one win, talking myself into Dallas really making a series out of this, but I just think it's worth reminding everybody that these were two teams that were pretty evenly matched, and Game 3 was very much an outlier. We'll take a timeout, and we will come back and go back to the hardwood as Abby Chin from NBC Sports Boston will join. The Celtics fend off elimination for the second time this week last night on their home court. We'll talk to Abby about the vibe in Boston. I'm sure everybody really believes they can do this. That's up on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
It is now 3-2 in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals as the Boston Celtics win 110-97 last night on their home floor to send the series back to South Beach. And we're going to go out to the Progressive guest line to talk more about it as we bring on Abby Chin, sideline reporter for NBC Sports Boston, covering the Celtics. Abby, good to have you aboard. How are you?
I'm doing well. Much better now.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody in Boston. Doesn't it just feel, you're up there, nationally everybody's talking about the Celtics really being able to do this in Boston. Is that the expectation now? Does everybody already have their plans for Game 7?
Well, I think, everybody's pretty positive. everybody, I would say, me personally, cautiously optimistic, just knowing what is ahead for the Celtics, that no team in NBA history has ever come back from an 0-3 hole. But all of the fans here in Boston, very aware of 2004 and the Red Sox. And I have to tell you that I was trying not to get too excited after the Celtics and the way they started in Game 4. But then when they showed Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter on the Jumbotron, I started to believe that this could be possible.
Well, and you have to think that the Celtics will lean into this and we'll have like a Johnny Damon or Kevin Millar sighting at Game 7 if they force it, right?
I was hopeful to see Pedro Martinez.
There you go.
Game 5 last night, but no dice.
All right.
So, we'll see.
When it comes to on the court, though, last night was the first game of the series where I just said, okay, that team is the best team in the NBA, the Celtics, and that's an 8 seed in the Miami Heat. Why did it take so long for us to say that?
I think if the Celtics had the answer to that, it wouldn't have happened that way. Unfortunately, you're right. That is the defensive intensity that this Celtics team had as their identity a season ago after about January when they really turned things around. And it's something that we have only caught glimpses of for moments during the game, but I think what you really saw in Game 5 was a complete game performance on both ends of the floor. And the Celtics raising it to another level. Marcus Smart set the tone with that first possession, the steal, and pushing it up to Jason Tatum in transition, and everyone else followed suit for the rest of the game. But that is the defense that they are capable of, and that's what's most maddening, is that they have not consistently brought that, particularly in these playoffs.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's interesting is the 7-1 in their last 8 elimination games, and that's not necessarily a Udoka Joe Mazzulla thing. I know there's been a lot of talk about Mazzulla and how competent he is as a head coach, but that obviously goes back to last year's playoffs when Udoka was the coach. So it almost feels like this is a student that procrastinates and then pulls out a good grade in the 11th hour, right?
I'm so sorry. I heard two different questions.
No, I said, like, do you agree with the notion that the Celtics are kind of like they wait until the elimination games to play well? It's kind of like they're the student that procrastinates and then pulls out a good grade in the 11th hour, right?
Yes, and the problem is human nature, and I can't fault them because I completely understand what that's like. I just really thought that they would be able to manufacture some of that back against the wall urgency in a game 3 mm-hmm. in Miami after dropping the first 2. So there's no question over the last 2 years, this team has had a tendency to make things difficult on themselves, much more difficult than they have to be. But more often than not, they've come through this season. They are 4-0 in elimination games. And over the last 2 seasons, they are 11-1. The only loss is in that game 6 to the Warriors in the NBA Finals.
What was the vibe like last night? I mean, was this a group that felt like, okay, like we're going to be back here for a 7th game? Or, you know, is there still kind of a quieter confidence and more cliche type talk?
I think for the first time we saw a little bit of swagger, particularly from Jaylen Brown. As he stepped off the podium last night, he said, these next 2 games are going to be fun. So, and we also saw his post-game interview walk off on the court. Said they let us get 2. So there was a little bit of swagger. They are still cautious. Marcus Smart in the locker room afterwards, someone asked him about the next 2 games, and he said, whoa, 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 we got to get 1. Yeah. And so they know that the work is not done, and it is going to be tough. That's what every guy we talked to last night mentioned, just how much of a dogfight Game 6 is going to be in Miami. But this is the position they put themselves in, and they have no reason to not be confident because so far, they have come through in these situations.
You know, I feel like it's worth noting that the team on the other side, while the Celtics have been this kind of inconsistent Jekyll and Hyde team most of the playoffs, the Heat have been the model of consistency, and last night was the first time that they've lost back-to-back games in the entire playoffs. So I think you're going to get the Heat's best shot tomorrow night, right?
Oh, I have no doubt. Jimmy Butler, in particular, telling us after the game that they are going to continue to play that consistency and raise the level that they have been playing at. I think that what the difference has been in these last 2 games is that Jason Tatum has been the best player on the floor. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Butler needs to be that for them to close out these Celtics. And while Al Horford continues to tell me that the Celtics don't feel any pressure after going down 0-3, they had nothing to lose and they are able to play free, I wouldn't quite put the pressure on Miami just yet, because all they have to do is win one.
Right. You know, you mentioned Tatum being the best player on the floor, and we've talked about some of the team-wide inconsistencies for the Celtics in these playoffs. But how about for Tatum? I mean, he's the guy everybody looks at and expects to go make a big play, and you see him drop 51 against the Sixers in Game 7. He's doing all of that, but there have been these fourth quarters where he's just been invisible. What is it about his game that sometimes comes and goes in big moments?
Well, I think that's the definition of a superstar, right? And that is that they bring that level of intensity and superstardom play on both ends of the floor every single night. And the reality is that Jason Tatum, while he is otherworldly and humbly one of the best players in the world, he is still only 24, 25 years old. And so to bring that level of consistency every night, I think is a lot too much to expect to put on a person. And he has leveled up these last two games. We saw him do it at the end of Game 6 and throughout Game 7 in that last series against Philly. So there's no question that he's capable. It's just a matter of doing it. And that's where the challenge is and why I am cautiously optimistic, because they have to do it for four straight games under the crucible of elimination.
A few more here with Abby Chin, Celtics sideline reporter for NBC Sports Boston. And Abby, I feel like you would be a good person to talk to this as well. There have been some smoke, maybe not smoke, about Jaylen Brown and his relationship with the Celtics and maybe a possible trade at the end of the season. What was your sense kind of covering the team all year if there was some tension, and there was a report earlier this week that some players, plural, you know, did kind of have their allegiances more towards Ime Udoka? Have you gotten the sense during the entire season that there was some disjointment, I guess, if that's a word, between the players and star players and the organization?
I can say unequivocally, no, not at all. I think losing is something that no one enjoys, and no one was happy during those three games, but it's not something like there is a rift in the locker room. Jaylen and Jason have a mutual respect. They're not best friends. They don't hang out at each other's houses all the time, but there's no question that they believe in each other and have faith and confidence in each other. And I think that once Jaylen was named to the All-NBA team, there's no question about the course going forward. And so I think that the Ime Udoka report was a really odd time for that to come out. I mean, there was some discussion at the beginning of the season when everything went down, and when there were reports that he would be hired in Brooklyn, the players did voice their confusion as to not being able to know the whole story. And if he is able to get rehired, why can't he work here? But since then, it really hasn't been something that I have heard anyone discuss.
All right, lastly, just as far as how this thing ends, I still think Miami will win, because I don't think you can break the Heat. I really believe in that Heat culture, and I don't think that that's why back-to-back losses for the first time in the playoffs happened for them last night, because they have been so consistent, and it is such a tight locker room there. I still think Miami wins the series. How do you see it?
Well, like I have said, number one, I'm in Boston. I'm with this team all the time.
Sure.
But number two is that I am not going to bet against this group until I'm proven wrong. And outside of Game 6 in the NBA Finals, taking on the champion in the Golden State Warriors, the heart of a champion, we saw that on display, I'm not going to count against these Celtics. So I am going to remain cautiously optimistic and confident that they will be able to make history. They're halfway there.
Is that a call?
No.
Okay.
All right. Cautiously optimistic.
All right. Abby Chin from NBC Sports Boston covering the Celtics. Kind enough to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. Abby, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of the series.
Thank you.
Okay. We will take a timeout and we'll come back. And there was some pretty big NFL news, which I had already built enough of the rundown, and I didn't think it was big enough to lead the show with. So we will get to it, though, on the other side after we kick off the show with a lot of playoff talk. So we'll get to that major NFL news item that came across the ticker about an hour and a half ago. And a lot of Memorial Day weekend talk in the second hour of the show, as it is the unofficial start of the summer. My name is Greg Frank, hanging out with you for another hour and change. John Bellmer on the other side of the glass. Don't forget about our Friday benchmarks. The 10th inning and the Friday 5 are the final two segments of today's show, as they are for every Friday. Back on the other side to talk some NFL. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.
back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, so I mentioned about an hour before we jumped on, there was some NFL news that we were going to address on today's show. And by big news, I think it's big because of the name of the player involved, not necessarily big because it came as a huge surprise. And the Arizona Cardinals have released DeAndre Hopkins. And DeAndre Hopkins is one of the best wide receivers of the last 10 years, I think is a fair label to put on him. And he is set to turn 31 in a couple of weeks, birthday on June 6th. So what does he have left? And, you know, that's the more interesting piece of the equation here for me, because I don't think that there's anything that's what I said. It wasn't that surprising. It was big news because of the name, not big news because of of an element of shock that existed. There was no real element of shock. The Arizona Cardinals are going to suck in 2023, and they're probably going to stink in 2024. And matter of fact, and I don't even necessarily disagree with this, a lot of people are already kind of saying, well, here, this is the first step into the exit of Kyler Murray from Arizona, because we know that they're going to stink. A lot of people think that they're going to be able to draft Caleb Williams first overall next year, quarterback out of USC. And, you know, if you're Arizona, like, that you're a rebuilding club, I think people think that Williams, like, the hype around this guy is pretty high. I mean, you know, I remember Belmer, were you a don't take a quarterback if you're the Texans, wait for Caleb Williams guy? There were some of those people here.
No, I wasn't. Okay. No, I was quarterback.
Yeah, I always thought that was a little stupid, because you can never, like, even Arizona, who looks like they may be the worst team, especially without Kyler Murray for most of the year, I'm not going to be shocked if they don't have the first overall pick, because you're going to luck your way into two or three wins at least. And, you know, if you happen to win a fourth, that might be enough to pick second or third. Like, so the point I'm making here is, I think that if they are able to get Caleb Williams in the draft, it makes a ton of sense for them to do it, because they're not a contending team right now. So you move off of Kyler Murray and offload him to a team that, and someone would trade for him, and you offload him to a team that has a more ready-made roster around the quarterback spot, and you start over if you're the Arizona Cardinals. So DeAndre Hopkins' days in the desert were always numbered. And so the more interesting part of this discussion is, what does he have left at 31 in a couple of weeks? And, I mean, he still had, in 9 games last year, he had 717 yards. You know, so that's another 1,000-yard season if he's on the field the whole season. You remember he had the suspension for, I think it was a PED violation that he had to serve at the beginning of the season. So I still think there's, whatever this next contract he signs, whether it's a year, 2 years, because usually guys get released and it's because the contract was a bit of an albatross and the team couldn't find a trade partner. And, you know, he's still a nice player, but he maybe doesn't garner the salary cap hit that you're going to have with him on the roster, so you just move on. Like, I think Hopkins is still, what, 80% of DeAndre Hopkins, 85%? And if I'm getting that kind of player on a short-term deal, which is usually what happens after these guys get released, I think it's interesting. I think there's going to be a big market for this guy. And I think that the list of suitors is probably pretty wide, because you could argue, we were talking in show prep, I don't think it's all that realistic, but you could argue a return to Houston might make some sense, because the wide receiver room might as well be me and John Belmer for the Texans. And you got C.J. Stroud. You want to help groom your young quarterback with a franchise legend? You know, I could see that. And that's a team that was one of the worst in the league last year. There are a lot of teams, like the Detroit Lions, Buffalo Bills, gosh, even the Kansas City Chiefs, who you look at their rosters and say, yeah, they could need help at wide receiver. Bring him in, and he can help them win a Super Bowl. I don't know if the Lions are ready to win a Super Bowl yet, but they're certainly ready to be a playoff team in an NFC that, after the Eagles, is wide open. So, those are a few. Buffalo, Kansas City, Detroit. I have a few others that at least, you know, pique my interest. The Baltimore Ravens. Okay. Just because you now have signed Lamar doesn't mean you stop on that commitment that you seemingly made to him before he was signed of, hey, we're going to go out and help you. And obviously they drafted, I think it was Zay Flowers in the first round.
Yes.
Yeah. And then signed Odell Beckham Jr. They're getting Rashad Bateman back, who was a recent first-round draftee as well at wide receiver. So do the Ravens just decide, hey, we're going to go all in for you. Like, you're our guy. We got this done. Like, let's bring in another guy, and then your Batemans and your Flowers, you know, the younger guys, can, we're not thrusting them into massive roles right away. We still have Mark Andrews, who's one of the best tight ends in football. Ravens make a lot of sense as far as I'm concerned. Another AFC team that from a personnel standpoint makes sense, but I think from a, you know, chemistry locker room fit would not, is the New England Patriots. Because we know who is the OC now in New England. That would be one, Bill O'Brien, who made the trade to jettison DeAndre Hopkins to the desert in the first place. And it was a horrible trade for the Texans. And, you know, I wouldn't blame DeAndre Hopkins if he was like, hey, I could go anywhere in the league. Why would I go to New England? But from a roster standpoint, the Patriots are horrible at wide receiver. And listen, say what you want about New England post-Brady. It obviously hasn't been great. They missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. And the one time they made it, they got shellacked by the Bills in Buffalo. But they've still been able to at least get in the mix, you know, 8-9-win team. You put Hopkins in a desperate position of need with your young quarterback. It doesn't make you worse, I'll tell you that much. So I think the Patriots are definitely at least if DeAndre Hopkins can move past the Bill O'Brien stuff, if maybe he just wants the best contract out there, and if New England offers him a contract that's better than other teams, when what they offer, maybe it still happens. I'd still be surprised. I think the New York Giants are a slam dunk because, again, that is a wide receiver room that is in dire need of a shot in the arm, and that is a young quarterback in Daniel Jones who they just paid. Now, here's the interesting thing with the Giants. Where are they on the Saquon Barkley negotiations? Because he's been tagged. And how much of a priority is it for them to sign Barkley to a long-term deal before July 15th, which is the deadline for long-term deals for franchise tag players? Or would they just say, you know what? If we can get DeAndre Hopkins, that's going to be more of a priority. Saquon, you're playing the year on the tag. That wouldn't necessarily make the relationship between your star running back and the franchise any better. If anything, it might make it worse. But if you can get DeAndre Hopkins as a result of Barkley being on the franchise tag in 2023 and not committing to Barkley beyond 2023, you know, it probably makes some sense. So I think the Giants are a no-brainer. And now here's the last one that I thought of. This is just me off the top of my head, like, where does Hopkins make sense? There's a promo for me, for our show, in the system that runs, if you listen on the app. I'm talking about how the Green Bay Packers should still be looked at as a playoff contender at the very least in a bad NFC, and how Jordan Love should be able to come right in. And you look at Rodgers, 2022 wasn't great, and the defense was pretty good in Green Bay last year, and they were in a win and were in regular season finale game against the Detroit Lions at home, which they lost. So I don't think the Packers are that far away from being good again. And we know that, I mean, it's been well documented, their need for some help at wide receiver. And we still don't know if Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson can even play. I mean, they could end up just being two stiffs. So I think the Packers are another one where you look at the roster, obvious need at wide receiver, but you also say they're not that far away. So those are just some, you know, I saw the Odd Shark tweet that posted gambling odds for his next destination. The Bears were listed on there. Like, I guess from a we're going to help Justin Fields standpoint, I kind of get it, but they got DJ Moore in that trade. So, you know, going back from 1 to 9. So I don't know that I see the Bears. And the other team that's on here that I didn't mention is the Carolina Panthers. Obviously, I guess, again, personnel-wise, they just lost DJ Moore in that trade with the Bears. So I could kind of see it. Young quarterback, Bryce Young, number one overall. But I don't know. Are they a contender? If I'm Hopkins, I think I can pick better spots than Carolina. It is Memorial Day weekend, and maybe you're celebrating with a bottle of wine. And if you're doing so, we want to tell you to go to our friends at Total Wine & More. With so many bottles to choose from, there's always something new to try at Total Wine & More. How about a great Prosecco for under $8 and a French Rosé for under $7? With the lowest prices for over 30 years, find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. We'll take a time out, and it's funny, I just mentioned Aaron Rodgers. A little bit of a pet peeve of mine with media coverage around star athletes when their off seasons begin. And as it pertains to LeBron James, I'll give my example on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.